an interesting op-ed that appeared very recently by Frank Lorenzo. He's the man that put together Texas International and Continental Airlines and the People Express, founded New York Air. And, of course, he's the author of the new book, Flying for Peanuts. But also, he has some interesting observations about what's going on in the airline industry right now and talking about maybe the re-regulation of the airline industry. Frank Lorenzo joins us right now. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Well, thank you. Thank you, David. Yes, the current administration seems to be unable to keep its fingers off the airlines. It sounds great politically to announce that you want to make bathrooms bigger and make seat pitches and legislate a bigger seat pitch. But nobody bothers to explain to people that this is all basic to the economics of the company, that when you increase seat pitch, you decrease the number of seats on the airplanes, which means you got to make it up in fares. But nobody tells the public about the other half of the equation.
You know, parcel with this is the idea that you have to have, you know, their junk fees that are sort of what they're calling junk fees that are added to tickets.
They call them junk fees. But they're all part of the economics of airlines. And I don't think you see airlines that are super, super profitable. And labor costs have gone up very, very sharply, as they are in Boeing and other places, too. So, you know, it's not a free pass for airlines. But junk fees are just another way of separating out. People can buy what they want. If people fly without bags that they want to check, why should they indirectly pay for people who want to bring two heavy pieces where you have to make sure you have sufficient ground staff and so forth?
Right.
I mean, it's a way of cutting up the pieces of an airline's product and giving the public the opportunity to decide what they want.
You know, and it's an interesting dilemma right now, and it's really come to light. Elliott Management, the activist shareholder that has over 10% of Southwest Airlines right now, has been pushing, well, not only for a change in management, but also for the addition of, you know, reserve seating and premium seating, and I think ultimately getting rid of the bags fly free. And Southwest has acquiesced in some cases, done something they'd never done since their inception, which was they're going to have pricing for premium seating and do some overnight flights and have, you know, have some set asides. They seem to be going the other way.
Well, David, I guess I have two reactions to that and what's going on with Elliott and Southwest. One is that 10% ownership means something. And, you can't get away from it in our capitalistic system. But the second one is that many times financially oriented people think that you can go into an airline and take the best passengers or take their passengers and take away, make major changes in fares and seating and all these things, make them so that they're more profitable without any cost, that it's just going to be accepted by the public, and have often found that it isn't. So I think, you know, one has to be cautious about changing. It's been a great formula that Southwest had. Maybe it needs to be modified in some ways. The management will, you know, be in the best position to know that. But openly discarding the rhythm of Southwest, I think, is a real mistake, personally.
You know, as an airline owner, you were in an interesting position, I guess the ones are now, too, because you've really got three major constituencies. You have the flying public, which feels like they ought to dictate fares and frequencies and comfort levels and everything else. You've got all of the employees that are out there that obviously, you know, feel like they need, you know, better wages and better working hours and stuff like that. But then if you're a public company, you've got shareholders who want a profit. How do you balance these three?
Well, and these days you now have a fourth public, and that's the government, where you have to make sure that the DOT likes what you're doing or feels that you're doing enough for the traveling public. Very, 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 very tough. You know, the fact is that the employees have gotten hit with tremendous amounts of inflation, and it's hurt them a lot. So they are anxious to get caught up, and in many cases they have been. So you have a number of publics, and balancing all those pieces is not easy.
You had trouble with unions, and it was when you came in to really resurrect Continental Airlines. It was bankrupt. Most of us at the time said, there's no way that airline can fly through bankruptcy. Nobody will fly a bankrupt carrier. But you did. You did the unthinkable. You kept flying through it. But what you also did was effectively abrogated all of the union contracts and got the prices down. That made you some enemies for a long time, didn't it?
Well, we didn't want to do that. We worked very hard trying to come to an arrangement, come to a deal with our pilots. We even offered them ownership of a major chunk of the airline in return for recognizing the airline's economics. Our lunch was being eaten by Southwest on one hand, and on the other hand, by the large carriers that were now able to come into so many of our markets. We were really the like I used to always say, we were the ham in somebody else's sandwich.
So is this a business that you would want to get into now, given the state of affairs and the relative concentration of ownership right now?
Well, with concentration, I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, now they're public companies.
But you've got, what, four companies that probably account for 80% of the...
Yeah, and then you have some startups that are doing very well. They're going through some tough periods, as many businesses do. But you have a very competitive industry, and people that think there's no competition just because there's only four carriers... make a mistake. I mean, I think there's plenty of competition out there.
So you wrote the book, and you've been working. I know you worked on this book for probably a decade. What did you learn from about yourself and about the experience in writing that book?
I learned that it was very easy to put things off, and the fact is that all through the teens, it was constant. I was more focused on deals we were doing, activities in Houston and in our office in New York, and I really didn't give that much attention to the book, but I did get fits and starts. It was only in the last 5 years that I decided to let's get this done. Let's get my story out there. And I really worked at getting it done.
It's a long history.
I mean, a lot to a book. And I have to say, I learned a lot,
but a lot to your life too. I mean, you were just a kid. I mean, weren't you and your business partner, Carney, were what, straight out of business school when you took on Texas International?
When we were straight out of business school, he got an investment banking job and I got a job at TWA. I got fed up with big companies and I got another job at Eastern Airlines. That was no better. And Carney, meanwhile, was at an investment banking firm. And he got fed up with the fact that they were huge. It was S.G. Warburg with operations in London. So we decided to quit, take a risk on our own. We were both 26 and see what the roll of the dice could do. Our first office was in the library because we couldn't afford a regular office or a secretary or anybody else. Mm. But we had a few ideas and one of them clicked and, you know, there we go.
And next thing you know, you're flying for peanuts. Frank Lorenzo, the former CEO of Continental Airlines and about half the rest of the airline industry. It's good to spend some time with you finally. Thank you very much. And thanks for writing the book.
Thank you, David.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
For more of our conversation, go to krld.com/CEO. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.